Dear listeners, a little while ago, a few privileged few amongst us went up to the British Film Institute to see the Paul McGann Doctor Who movie. However, the Q&A session was rather interesting because they had a novel way of saying whether you had the answer or not. So, we will recreate this here by answering a few sample questions. What is the answer to life, the universe and everything?
Dick!
What is the velocity of an African swallow?
Dick!
Who's going to be the first person to say the word dick?
Dick!
Oh.
As if you're going to beat me.
Yeah.
Nobody can beat your dick.
Welcome, 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 dear listeners, one and all, to this, the latest in a long line of Staggering Stories podcast. I'm Crumbly.
I'm Jay.
I'm Adam.
I'm Azaman.
And I, yes, I am
Dick.
Yeah. Merely Keith. Because I'm here alone, by myself.
Unsullied.
On my tub.
Oh, solo dick.
I can see an overriding theme during this podcast.
This is where you say something like, flaccid dicks aside.
Yeah, we had enough dick. Mm.
Yeah. You can never have too much dick.
Yeah, yeah.
Moving rapidly on.
Anyway, dear listeners, strange intro besides, it's the news with El Presidente.
Woo-hoo!
Doctor Who news.
Oh, yep.
Oh.
Some episodes coming to AMC Plus in the USA. Mm. Yep. With Disney killing its deal to create new Doctor Who alongside the BBC, that leaves a gap in North American distribution. A gap that is now being filled by the AMC Plus streaming service. Not IMC, but AMC Plus streaming service. At least for a subset of Doctor Who. This isn't a deal to create new Doctor Who, but instead a home for existing new Doctor Who's back catalogue. I.e. 2005 Eccleston season, starting with Rose, up to 2022, Jodie Whittaker's finale, The Power of the Doctor. The Disney Plus co-production episodes of RTD2 era will remain on Disney Plus. No classic Who is included in this new AMC Plus deal. Boo. Mm-hmm. AMC's Courtney Tomosa said of this,
"We're thrilled to welcome the Whoniverse into our home of fandoms, giving longtime fans a reason to return while inviting new audiences to discover one of television's most beloved franchises."
This doesn't affect the availability of all existing TV episodes on the BBC iPlayer in the UK, nor does it bring us any closer to a co-production deal for the new episodes. As for who might pick up this year's BBC-only produced Christmas special outside the UK, this is still a total mystery.
It would be interesting. I'm just wondering if they screwed up again the way they did with the Fox movie.
With Gatua's era being marooned on Disney Plus, or eventually removed, no doubt.
Eventually, anyway. Yeah, I can see it being eventually removed, and the only place you'll get it is the BBC iPlayer.
The iPlayer, yeah.
Which people outside the country.
From the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah, we mentioned, I think, before last time that they still haven't released War Between the Land and the Sea yet, and they may not even do that. So it may just sit there.
Yeah, a Disney tax write-off.
Yes.
Could be.
Yeah.
Could well be. We'll see. But, I suppose that's kind of good news, but it's so fragmented now. What with Disney, Classic Who, the new Who in the middle of the two.
Yeah. It
makes it a bit of a mess for the BBC. As
I say, I think they may have shot themselves in the foot.
Well, they had hopes that Disney would bring a new audience and stick with it for years to come, but
at least they're still interested in signing up that sort of new Who era, though.
Yeah, that's quite positive. It sort of makes sense for AMC, really, because I believe they are the owners of the BBC America brand in the US.
You're right.
So, of course, Doctor Who has a long history with BBC America.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not impossible they might do a deal to co-produce Doctor Who, new Doctor Who. But it'd be a weird gap for them in their archive.
Yeah. If they invite our Tennant back to be, what is it?
If you
see Whittaker ended on Tenant, yeah. So they can do another just bridge the gap.
That's it, yeah. Don't mention the splitting off with the gap with Doctor.
Between land and sea. Yeah, if you have him regenerate, or her, regenerate again, Durdledor, into Tenant again.
Yeah.
It could be seamless.
You can do that.
Anyway, X-Files. Ryan Coogler's pilot enters production.
Your news are a bit tongue-twister.
They are.
Twister.
So I'm not a good tongue-twister at the best of times.
No, I struggled.
Dick!
The truth is officially back out there, because Ryan Coogler's X-Files reboot is finally moving into production. Hulu officially ordered a pilot earlier this year, and filming is already underway in Vancouver, exactly where the original series shot its early and best seasons. About to make a comment there, Joe?
I agree that Vancouver is the best place for X-Files. I mean, it had that lovely atmospheric quality to it.
Wasn't quite the same when it moved to LA.
No, it was far too bright.
Coogler is writing and directing the pilot himself, and we now know who will be leading the new basement dwelling department of two. Now, please excuse me, because I'm really going to mangle this. Daniela Deadwalier and Hamish Patel.
Hamish. Yeah.
Okay.
Hamish Patel, yeah.
Hamish.
Yeah. Okay. And no, they aren't playing new versions of Mulder and Scully. Instead, they're playing two entirely original FBI agents with clashing personalities who get stuck investigating unexplained phenomena. The pilot's guest rota is led by Oscar-winning Amy Madigan, alongside the likes of Steve Buscemi and Ben Foster. It is also...
The conductor.
I thought he was, but you're the one who wrote this.
I'm just reporting what I heard.
It also employs some very notable Native American talent, including Reservation Dogs star Dervy Jacob and Tantu Cardinal, which suggests the pilot mystery might be tied to the indigenous community. The original series creator, Chris Carter, is on board as an executive producer, though perhaps just as a payoff rather than having any real involvement.
I expect so. Yeah.
There is no official release date yet, leaving us to wonder how or if this new era will be connected to the original convoluted mythology.
So no David Duchovny or Gillian Anderson then?
No. I am sorry for being shocked with Hamish Patel, but I recognise the name and I know the actor and I quite enjoy him.
I think it's Hamish Patel.
I recognise the actor's name and have enjoyed his work before.
Yeah, didn't he do Yesterday?
So who's the production company on this?
I've got no idea.
Yeah, because the original production company was 1013. So.
Yeah, that was Chris Carter's production.
Yeah. I think it's Ryan Coogler's production company, whatever that is. Wasn't it Hulu who did the Buffy reboot pilot?
Yes.
So whether this actually gets released or released when anything is up in the air. But
I mean, I know the X-Files went off-piste in later series. Who's the guy who played Agent Doggett and...
Patrick.
The Terminator 2.
The T-1000.
That's the trouble. It did suffer a lot of the mystery box problem.
Yeah.
You open the box, solve the mystery, the show's over. So you've got to keep adding to the mystery box. It was the same thing that happened with Lost.
Yeah, and they had no idea where they were going with it either. Yeah. They were making up as they went along, very clearly.
Yeah.
As was common at the time.
Yes.
The obvious exception of Babylon 5.
Yes. Babylon 5 is the exception. Even now is the exception rather than the rule.
Yeah. You rather butchered Steve Buscemi's name there.
I know. I've worked these false teeth in for a horse.
Can I ask, is it actually Reservation Dogs?
I'm not sure.
There is a Reservation Dogs and there is a Reservoir Dogs.
Right. Okay, I did wonder that too. I meant to look it up and I didn't get around to it.
Well, you said there were some sort of Native Americans.
According to this, there's a or certainly in the pilot, there is a Native American.
Which is something they did in.
They did touch upon.
They did
in the original series.
Between season 2 and 3.
Yeah, did an episode called Anasazi.
Yeah, that's the one, yes. Yeah.
I mean, that had, Floyd Redcrow has been quite a few things.
Mm. Yeah. We'll see if that ever gets put to air, let alone released to a series.
Well, I'd kind of like to see that.
Yeah, likewise.
Westworld. Rebooting as a film. With the Westworld TV series having been cancelled before the planned fifth and final season went into production in 2022, now the brothers Warner are taking the concept back to the big screen. Little is currently known, except that it won't be related to the HBO series. We do know that the first screenwriter will be David Cope, known for just such films as Jurassic Park, the Tom Cruise The War of the Worlds, the first Mission Impossible film, and Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Don't hold that against him.
With AI being such a topical subject, we probably shouldn't be surprised that this new film is in the works.
Where it started, well, obviously it was a book originally.
Yeah. Michael Crichton again.
Yeah, Michael Crichton again, which Jurassic Park. Yeah. And there are rumours flying that maybe Spielberg come in to direct this, but I doubt it. Because obviously Spielberg was involved in the original Jurassic Park, Michael Crichton thing.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones, clearly.
He has form in this little group, but...
You see, because, AI is such a big topic at the moment, so it's an obvious one to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Will Yul Brynner's character, the gunslinger, be reprised?
Possibly.
Obviously, they would have to recast, or they probably
need
a big villain. But the gunslinger did show up in the TV series, only briefly.
More of an Easter egg than anything.
Yeah, it was more of an Easter egg from the TV series, but it was still there.
Time will tell. Assuming it even gets made.
Any addendums?
Not from me.
Nope.
I have a whole passel.
A whole passel
of addendums. My first addendum. Addendum the first is there is going to be a new Star Trek DS9.
Right.
A comic?
Ooh. Yeah, a web comic. Right, web 2.
Okay. Yeah.
Got our hopes up there.
No. It's going to be one of two new series, webtoon series. The first one released on Sunday, May the 17th.
Yesterday's release.
Yesterday.
The illustration is very manga-like, looking at it.
Okay, nice. Got Quark with big eyes.
Well, I don't think it's going to be, from the way I read it, I don't think it's going to be the main cast. It's going to be sort of a secondary cast, but set aboard DS9.
Okay.
So it's new characters, but aboard DS9. So we might have a few cameos or guest spots from the...
Is it set after the finale? Then?
I believe so, yes. And the next one is Star Trek Recollections, which will be debuting later.
What's that involving, do you know?
Not really. Stargazers. The first one is called Stargazers, which releases on May the 17th. Recollections, you're not going to be later in the year, doesn't actually say. But they're going to be episode count of about 40 issues each.
What do you mean by webcomic? Is it just a comic, but just in...
It's on a site called Webtoon. So it's a webcomic to be downloaded, but it can be downloaded from the Webtoon site.
Okay, I've not heard that one. All right. You buy issue by issue, do you, on Webtoons?
Yeah, I would assume so, yes.
So it's a bit of a rival to Amazon.
Yeah.
So Comixology, what became Comixology?
Yeah.
With Amazon, it's now just Kindle, isn't it, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Second two addendums are slightly sad, I'm afraid.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Tom Baker.
No. David Burke.
Oh, yes.
Dead, unfortunately. In this group, he's best known for the original Dr. Watson from the...
Jeremy Brett series.
Late 80s Sherlock Holmes series.
Yep.
I think that's almost the definitive Sherlock Holmes series
Before recast as Edward Hardwick.
Yes.
Well, I must admit, I preferred as Watson.
And he passed away at the grand age of 91 years.
Good innings.
And again, it's a wide range of film credit, starting back in 63 with Coronation Street. Zed Cars, Play of the Week, Dixon of Dock Green, Play for Today, Crown Court, House of Elliot, Waking the Dead, Ghost Story for Christmas, The Woman in Black, Heartbeat and Young Messiah, to name a few.
The Bill, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Bill was in
House
there
of
too.
Elliot, that's Gene Casualty. Marsh, wasn't it?
Yeah, back in those days, they always seemed to be in Zed cars, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah, Dixon of Doc Green.
That was the... predecessor to the Bill, everybody was in it.
Yeah, yep. And that's just the TV credits. The film credits was in an episode of The Avengers.
Oh.
Yeah, film credits, Young Messiah, Only the Lonely. They go on and on and on. Space Precinct, there you go.
Oh, wow.
He was in Space Precinct.
You picked out the important one for the list there.
Yeah, for our little group.
Quite a jobbing actor then.
Mm. Yes, It's one of, again, it's more or less a face that you recognise but not necessarily put a name to, but always, nearly always there.
Yeah.
And my second death is Jill Curzon.
Dead.
Oh, really?
Of the second Doctor Who film.
Yeah, the Peter Cushing, Dalek Invasion Earth 21.
Dalek Invasion Earth,
yeah.
She passed aged 87.
Okay.
Again, another jobbing actor. She's been in lots and lots of things. Started in 62 with Out of This World. And then we have Dr. Sin, alias the Scarecrow, the Intelligent Man, Hugh and I, the Saint, World of Fraser, Dalek Invasion Earth, Adam Adamant Lives, the Champions.
Right, yeah, the ITC stuff.
Yeah, so, again...
Sadly
passed.
So it was his niece Louise, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We had to go wider into the family.
Yeah. Louise who?
That's it, she never got a character options because of legal reasons.
That's it, I'm addendum out.
Wow.
And thus ended the news.
Aye. We have been watching stuff.
We have.
Oh, yes.
Stuff and things.
A film, but not at the cinema.
No. And things of time past. Literally.
Yes. Oh, very good.
Yeah. Yes. See what I did then?
Yes. Very nice.
Thank you.
Golf clap.
What we have been watching is, following up from last time, Men in Black 3.
And pause for music.
I remember seeing this at the cinema.
I think we saw it at the cinema,
Seem that long ago.
Another gap, isn't it, between 2 and 3?
This is 10 years after Men in Black 2, which is 2002.
Mm. Wow.
And then Men in Black 1 was 1997, I think it was five years before that.
Yeah.
But it's been a while.
Out of all of them, I think this is the superior one. It's certainly on a par with number 1.
Yeah.
Because I found number 2 flagging, but this one, even now, gripped me all the way through.
They've gone a new direction with this one.
Yeah.
Whereas the sequel was a bit of a rehash of the first film in many ways.
Yeah.
This is something entirely new.
I felt that the second one had more comedy, but this one sort of swapped the comedy for a more interesting plot.
Yeah,
I think that's true. Yeah, less comedy in it, less zany.
Less zany.
Yeah.
And less Tommy. There wasn't that much Tommy in the first one,
barely,
was there?
In it. Yeah.
Well, this is it. I don't know how old he was, but when we had Tommy Lee Jones in, he was looking very, very old.
He was.
Yeah, they both aged slightly at this point, hadn't they?
It was, say, 10 years between them.
I think in universe it was the same amount of time that had passed as we were waiting for the sequel as well. So.
Yeah.
Time had passed. We'd lost a few people. So
Zed was gone.
Sadly gone. So
there's an in joke about aging, isn't there? Where Jay goes back in time to find and bumps into Kay and says, "How old are you?" And he goes, 29. He's like, "Sheesh, life's too hard."
Who was it? Who was the actor who played the young Kay?
Josh Brolin. Yeah. Thanos.
But kudos to Josh Brolin. I thought he channeled Tommy Lee Jones.
The accent was perfect.
The accent, the attitude, the dialogue.
Very believable that this was a young version of Kay.
I don't think he quite had the deadpan humour quite as much as Tommy Lee Jones.
No, but again, that is pointed out. What the hell happened to you, man? So we, you're drawn attention to that.
Yeah. I don't know if the implication is what happens at the end of the film.
Yeah.
Is what happened to him, or there's something else bigger after that in between the films. I don't know. Do you want to ruin the plot?
Let's yeah, basic plot. Spoiler music, spoiling illusion. Though it has been a number of years, and if you haven't watched it yet and are listening to this, it's your own fault.
So we start with the moon base of
all
things.
Yes. We have
or a moon prison.
Yes. We have a bug-eyed, certainly a tentacled hand monster escaping from a lunar prison that has a grudge for Earth and a grudge against Kay in particular. Shooting off his arm, yes. He manages to do a prison break and gets back to Earth, leaping past the lunar module.
Which was right outside the prison.
So that tells you.
Well, I mean, if a like nice sort of buildings, you kind of need an outside monument as well to
some kind of sculpture or something. A small moon.
Yeah.
So he decides that he's going to change history.
Yes.
Prevent himself from being caught and imprisoned and losing his arm.
Yes.
By going back to 1960. Doing a time jump to 69.
A literal time jump.
And also killing Kay and in so deactivating the Earth force field.
Well, preventing it from being erected in the first place.
Preventing it from being deployed. The
and he does, doesn't it? It's successful because all of a sudden there's no Kay. Kay died in the 60s and everyone remembers him, but that he died.
Yeah.
So he's got a monument and everything. But Jay remembers him from yesterday.
Yeah.
And hanging up
of reasons.
Yeah.
Because he's the one who's travelled back in time. So he's outside the time field.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
So I don't think the time travellers works if you think
you don't think about it too heavily.
That's it.
You're a Doctor Who fan. You're not meant to think about time travel too heavily.
Because if he'd gone back and stopped it happening, he'd never go back to stop it happening.
This is true.
Well, you see, it depends on which timeline he's in.
Yeah.
You don't sound convinced.
I don't feel like it's timelines in this one.
No. It's the trousers of time theory.
Right.
You're in the same time, i.e. the trousers, but you're travelling down on a different leg.
Back onto McCoy and ferrets. You know.
Now, what surprised me, Boris the villain.
Oh, yes.
Now the animal.
Yes. Boris the animal.
It's just Boris.
The first time I watched it, I thought it was being played by Tim Curry.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, because...
Jermaine Clement.
Yeah.
Who did it. He's a New Zealander known for Flight of the Conchords and stuff like that, a comedian mostly.
We also have a time sensitive, don't we?
Who's that?
The guy with the hat.
What was it, Martin? Marty? I can't remember. Anyway.
Marty's a good one.
Yeah.
I like that.
But he
was channeling Robin Williams.
He's a species Griffin. That exists outside the timeline, so he can see all possibilities, all potentialities.
Doesn't know which one will come true until it's pretty much upon him.
I loved the idea and the way he was sort of almost childlike, because everything's a surprise. Although he can see everything, it's always a surprise to him.
Almost Matt Smithish, isn't it, in his portrayal. Yeah, it was very good.
I did enjoy it, and that was a new character. It took it off in a new direction.
Yeah, we don't have some of the old returning characters we had in the second one. So the worms are there very briefly.
The worms make up a cough and a spit.
There was a picture which might have been Frank.
Yeah, I noticed that above his bed,
Well, I think returns in the next film.
Oh, the international one?
The international, Men in Black International. So he's not dead, I don't think.
He's just not there. Yeah. He's off planet at the moment.
Must be.
Yeah.
So to travel back in time, Jay jumps off. Is it the Chrysler building?
The Chrysler building,
He stands on top of one of the eagles that is atop of the uppermost level and jumps off, which I love the follow back through time.
As he
falls. It's like a yo-yo.
I think when they hit the 1920s Wall Street crash. One of the people he sees jumping off is Stephen Sondheim, the director.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He'd like to do the odd cameo stuff. He was in the Men in Black 2 as well. He did a cameo. One of the people that was in the
Kay's apartment.
In Kay's apartment. Yeah.
He does a Hitchcock.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jay convinces the younger Kay to trust him.
Yeah.
And as soon as he does, he goes, right, what do we do? And Jay doesn't know. He just says, do we know? Do what you did last time.
Jay is all trying to sort of saying, well, I'm not going to sort of tell you because I want to protect the future and stuff. Yeah. And Kay's basically calling Jay out on his not telling the truth.
Yeah.
And like once Jay actually does tell the truth, Kay goes, All right, then. Fine.
Yeah.
Well, I like that. Sort of one punches him for lying and then punches him for telling the truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a couple of bits like that in this film, isn't there, where the truth matters.
Yes.
And, obviously, the launch for the moon landing is weaved into the plot as well. We actually climb up the rocket and the scaffolding for the Mick Finale.
That's what I like with the astronauts sitting in the lunar module when Kane leaps across the screen. So, did you see that? No, neither did you. We don't want to scrub the mission. Just ignore it.
But there is one point where it's very ominous from the time sensitive, and you suddenly think, oh, I thought Jay would get it, but now, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I wasn't sure how it's going to go. But
yeah, so there's a few variables in there.
Yeah, they do survive, but with death comes death.
Yes. Mm. Oh, yes.
I didn't recognise the colonel, but he's Mike Coulter, who you might know, Luke Cage.
Oh, yeah. Good grief, a very early role for him.
Well, relatively, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, unfortunately, the death is a colonel on the beach who turns out is probably Jay's actual father.
Yes.
Well, yeah, that Jay's actual father, because one of the things that we get is that Jay was bemoaning that his father was never around.
Yeah. Yeah. And right at the beginning of the film.
Yeah, and Kay was saying, well, so you shouldn't disparage your father.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And then ultimately we find out what happened is that,
Tim Curry.
Yeah, Tim Curry.
Tim Curry kills him.
Yeah, he kills him.
Yeah. And then Kay wipes Jay's memory and replaces it with happy memories. Yeah. It takes a walk along the beach. Because you could get away with that with kids back in that time, couldn't you, in the 60s?
Yeah.
Probably not that close to the launch site. Of.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, all you have to do, I noticed, was duck down a bit.
Yeah. And so I did like also the subtle advances of technology, like the neuralizer that they held in the MIB base. The big.
Yeah. And the portable one had like an internet dial
battery pack.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see some of the tech. It's obviously made it look a bit more 50s-like. Yeah.
Sort of, yeah. Well, it's nice just... It always did look 50s style.
It did. Like, really leaned into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
They did have some sort of Tron cars, didn't they? Well, Tron bikes at one point.
Bikes,
Unobikes.
Yeah.
It was just the one wheel.
The gyrobikes, wasn't it? Yeah.
And of course, we also had O, who's at the present Agent day o. the current head of MIB.
Yep, or MIB New York or America, I'm not sure which. Yeah.
And then we had a very young O when we went back into time.
Yeah, so Alice Eve was the young O.
Yes.
And then Emma Thompson was the elder.
Mm. Yeah. Yes. And so I did recognise Alice Eve from Star Trek Beyond.
Mm, it's the Khan one.
Yes.
Beyond is the third one.
Oh, sorry.
Into Darkness.
Thank you, Star Trek Into Darkness. Yes, because she played Carol Marcus from that.
Yes. Just can't help but think of that scene of her getting changed.
Typical of you,
yeah, and Emma Thompson, I think, turns up again in the next film.
Yeah.
So she's still head of MIB New York.
As I said, one of the things I did love with Emma Thompson is the eulogy for Zed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as the Squillian ambassador said, all these weird noises, and she does it completely deadpan.
Yeah, oh yeah. Obviously, she's got quite a comedy background. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Oh no, I think it's a really good film.
I think
it probably is my favourite of the.
For me,
the three.
For me, it is definitely on a par with number one, if not surpasses it.
Yeah. Mm. The only downside is, as you say, there's not much of Tommy Lee Jones in there.
No,
and his deadpan humour is so on point.
Yeah,
and it's a bit of a shame there's not much of that here.
But like I say, I think the younger Kay, although it wasn't quite as deadpan, I think the younger Kay...
He did a great job as a younger Kay.
Yeah, I was expecting it to be weaker than the second one, but I was pleasantly surprised because they completely changed tack with the plot.
I think the 10 years in development hell did it good.
Yeah, I certainly enjoyed it as well. I think, as you do, Keith, it's certainly up there with the first movie. Yeah. I do think the second movie was the weakest, so...
Well, that's still good.
Definitely enjoyed it.
Yeah. And a definite step up for the effects as well.
Oh, yeah.
There were some slightly dodgy effects in the second one, but the decade between...
Yeah, the tentacles in the second one were quite weak.
And the green screen was a bit iffy in the second one.
Yeah.
But Not on this one.
And a lot less product placement.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, hell of a lot
absolutely,
less.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah, they got rid of all their stores from they the did. Second one.
Well, if you have watched Men in Black 3 and have any thoughts, feelings, emotions about it, please tell us at show
at
staggeringstories.net.
Woohoo!
Right, ladies and gentlemen, in the near future, there is going to be a release of a DVD Blu-ray.
Tomorrow, as this podcast goes out.
Mm-hmm.
Officially.
And that Blu-ray DVD release will be of...
Doctor Who, the movie.
Dun, 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 dun.
Enemy Within, whatever it's meant to be called.
I think it's something like
Invasion of Canada.
So, as a promotion of it, the BFI did a showing of the remastered... revamped, redone movie, and two of us, there was three, but a couple of us aren't here, so two of us bounded up to go and watch it in their extremely comfortable seats.
Very early in the, fairly early in the morning as well.
I roll over and go back to sleep at 11 o'clock on Sunday.
And a lot of people were somewhat sleepy after a very late night watching Britain lose once again in Eurovision.
It's tradition. We uphold it. So, what was your thoughts?
It's been a while since I saw the TV movie. I think I last reviewed it like about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It was interesting to see it again on the screen, certainly on the big screen.
On the big screen.
For me, I lived in Vancouver for 13 years. Admittedly, after the TV movie was filmed, so I don't really recognize some of the places.
Yeah.
Like, there are some places, such as where the atomic clock was. That was in an area called the Plaza of Nations.
Yeah.
And that has since been torn down developed on. So is now condos rather than...
Oh, wow. Stargate filmed there at some point as well.
Yeah, Stargate was filming there as well. There was a number of things that filmed at the Plaza of Nations, but there's other recognisable things in there. Like, there was English Bay, which is where Grace's house was. I just recognise that the whole chase sequences, they like to use a road that goes alongside the freight line. Because they've got a big port in Vancouver. It's the biggest port in Western Canada. And there's a big long freight line that goes from there all across the country. And there's a road that runs alongside it. And in the evening, when most of the movie was taking place, that road is very quiet because there's no real traffic on it. Easy enough for it to close down and like do a motorbike chase on there.
The Blu-ray, when it finally comes out, will have two versions of the movie on it. One, the American version, which was shown in America, and two, the British version.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few scenes I didn't recognise in the one that they showed of the BFI. I think the shootout went on a little bit longer and more different shots. And I think the surgery on the Seventh Doctor, we have a scream that they didn't get televised. He sits bolt upright and screams.
Was that not on the BBC version?
Not on the BBC version.
Apparently the BBC were far too sensitive about that kind of stuff. And the director was saying that there was a number of things they had to cut for the BBC production.
Well, that's a point. Who were the guests?
When it was shown, it was just after the Dunblane massacre, so they cut down a lot of the gunplay.
Right,
The guests, we had Jeffrey Sachs and Paul McGann.
Nice. That's good.
Marquez, as ever. As it's been discussed, he's probably interfered with more music on Doctor Who than any other person.
I can't remember their names, but they were the people that were involved in scanning. I mean, they got 219 reels of film from Universal over in the States.
Crazy.
And had to scan it. I mean, they were getting a box of about 10 reels every week, mm-hmm. and it was tough for them to sort of go through and get that done.
They managed to get down to 1.5 boxes a day.
Yes.
Wow.
And they had to like to scan each reel twice. Yeah. Once was the first pass, and then for the HDR, they needed a longer pass with a longer exposure.
So they identify the bits they needed,
yeah.
and then...
Yeah. As I was saying, one of the couple of the frames had a massive scratch over the top of it, which they couldn't...
Yeah, that was there in the original broadcast, and they were able to paint over it for this release.
Right, yeah, they're good at that sort of thing. So they take the frame before and after and sort of clone bits in. Did you see any of these special features? Did they do a little montage or anything?
No special features there, but what we did get in addition to the TV movie was we got The Night of the Doctor played as well.
So we watched, in the afternoon, we watched the entire McGann
the
range.
The beginning and end of the Eighth Doctor, yeah.
There was a long queue, so we didn't get up there. But there was various props on display. The guy brought in the actual toolkit, the Doctor's bag toolkit, which is the genuine thing from the show. It still survives, and now... is permanently with the console. So the guy who owns the console owns the toolkit.
Apparently that got gifted. The guy who owned the console got gifted the toolbox because it was felt that the toolbox should stay with the console.
Yeah.
He also got the original screwdriver that McCann used that turned up a couple of years later at an auction, and the original TARDIS key that the Eighth Doctor used.
So
it's a nice little kit that stays with the McGann console.
What a living room that guy must have.
And also we had from Alex's shop, the Who shop, one of the staffs of Rassilon, the reflective posts that was up there. And as a small side note, the last time I saw that little reflective staff thing, it had been sprayed gold and was in Merlin's treasure room in one of the Stargate SG-1 episodes. It's just stuck in the background, you know, as part of the various bits of treasure.
Ends up in a prop store somewhere and got reused. Yeah. So anything interesting that began, I'd say, beyond the usual?
Again, not really. There wasn't a lot of new stuff.
He doesn't seem to be very involved with the special features, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
Did that get mentioned at all?
I
didn't hear anything really mentioned about special features that I can recall.
I don't think McGann said anything new, but it's interesting to hear him talk.
Yeah.
So he says it in interesting ways.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It's coincidentally, which we'll hear a little bit later, the weekend before we'd seen him at a convention.
Yes.
And the story of the fact that they probably wanted to cast his brother, but they got them mixed up, popped up again.
Yeah, one thing that they did clear up, and I forget who mentioned this, whether this was Jeffrey Saxon that said this, there was some kind of myth that Sylvester McCoy believed that he was holding the sonic screwdriver the wrong way round. Mm-hmm. And the director has actually gone on record and said, no, he didn't.
Oh, okay.
Because I think one of the scenes, the top of the sonic screwdriver is slightly blurred.
Yeah.
Because I think it was someone thought he was holding it the wrong way round. Sylvester thought he was holding it the wrong way round. But if you go back and look at Baker and Pertwee, they hold it anyway. There is no wrong way.
Depends on whether you're reversing the polarity or not.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Talking of Pertwee, of course, the film was broadcast.
Oh, yes.
Just after the body of Pertwee passed away.
Yes.
So I suppose.
We were reminded of that with the dedication to
John
Pertwee at the end.
Got a little round of applause. Didn't you? Didn't you, love? Yes, you got a little round of applause. Yes. Yeah, he's smirking there.
Well, I suppose we should better say hello to him since we've acknowledged him.
One,
two, three.
Hello, Helen Pertwee!
Hello, Inky, Dinky and Rinky McSkirt.
Various
lot.
Handles,
Graham, Terence, Dave Zilla the Mighty!
Yakko, Wacko and Dot.
Dangerous Churchill, Nazi Spock.
Various goats.
The Lumen. In time for the new film, Goofield Grogu.
Goofield Grogu.
So not only have we been watching movies of on this big screen and on little screens, but we've also been watching old television episodes.
Oh, yes.
Back from the mists of time. Yes,
and we've been watching some Doctor Who. Ooh. Pause for music.
What 1965!
What Doctor Who have been watching?
The Rescue.
The Rescue.
The Rescue.
Yes. Two-parter.
Set on Dido.
Do what?
Wasn't that a companion?
The planet Dido.
Isn't she a singer?
She is indeed, yes.
Well, I think this is actually the first time I've seen this.
First time I've seen it? Wow. Yes, I thought I'd seen it before. I knew the story. Watching it, I realised, no, I hadn't actually seen it.
This is the point. My touch base for certainly for the old Who's, the Troughtons and the William Hartnells, are the Target books.
Yes.
And so I'm more familiar with the Target books than I actually the televised episodes.
Yeah. I remember this because it leads straight into the Romans, doesn't
yes.
it?
Mm,
it
yes.
was one of those UK gold when that first came out. It's like I've suddenly had access to all these stories in the black and white era I hadn't seen before.
It's different in the respect it's only a two-parter.
Yeah.
And it's a character piece, essentially, isn't it?
Yes.
It's an introduction because we've just left Susan behind.
Yeah, it's spot lights Vicky,
who's
introduced in this episode.
There's basically just two guest stars. There are a couple other actors involved here and there, but
non-speaking actors, except for the radio.
Yes. That's it,
Susan is gone. She's dead.
Susan's dead.
They land on a planet. Well,
dead to them.
Yes. They land, but the ship before did not land very well at all.
No. And so they land on a planet where the Doctor himself has been before.
This is the first time that the Doctor has actually been to a planet previously that they've landed on.
Yeah, I think it's the first time they referred to an unseen episode or an unseen story.
And he starts thinking he'll just tell Ian that he meant to do it, but actually he was asleep when they landed. Yes. So he couldn't get away with it.
Some good character moments between the Doctor and Chesterton particularly.
But, I was struck by this. It's quite a different Doctor from what I'm used
it
to.
It is, and Hartnell's on form, isn't
he? That's what I mean.
He has one little slip-up, but
he's outstanding in this one. I mean, it's not cantankerous. He's not angry at any point or any time.
Not really. I think he probably should be for some bits.
Seems like Susan was holding him back.
Yeah,
possibly. Yeah, exactly. I did notice.
Cranky.
I did notice whilst listening to the audiobook that Ian Marta had gone into those scenes in a bit more depth, and he was a lot more cranky, and he was snippy at Ian a bit more. Mm. Yeah. But in this one, he's quite light-hearted. He's joking. Yeah.
It was quite a revelation to me.
And even when he confronted the baddie at the end, he was quite matter-of-fact about it, really.
Yeah.
And he goes for it, didn't he? They try to have a fight. He hasn't got a chance.
And it's Hartnell there doing a lot of rusty toughness.
He's being bent over a casket or by being throttled.
He was in the army.
Being throttled at one point. So, it's not as if they could have gotten a stand-in. Because you can see his face the whole time.
Yeah. There's a lovely moment, actually, when he asks Susan to open the doors of the TARDIS. Mm. And he just plays it on his face silently. But it's some really good emotion. And do you sort of remember how good he is as an actor?
When he was on form, when he was centred, shall I say.
Yeah.
He was very good. I was quite surprised.
I think also, very slightly, they play on Vicky's experiences on the planet, which is quite dark, isn't it? So her father's been killed, and she sort of cowls every time Bennett speaks to her as if she's been abused or treated really badly.
She doesn't seem like companion material, frankly.
No, she doesn't.
Not by today's standards, anyway.
No,
she'd never make it as a companion.
She was kind of filling the gap that Susan left behind.
Yeah, so I've got
a bit of a scream.
In the past, I have found Susan quite annoying.
Grating.
Yes.
And they're trying to do the effectively replacement character.
I didn't find Vicky necessarily so grating this time. Mainly because she's a new character, so that, giving her the benefit of the doubt, see how we progress.
She comes across a bit more innocent, doesn't she? A bit more human.
Considering Susan was meant to be a Time Lord, and therefore...
She got more weaker and weaker.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, maybe she's really traumatised, but still, she should have been stronger than like Vicky.
I love the design work on the story, what they managed to pull off for those two episodes. Raymond Cusick.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So the ship's interesting. The model shot. It's funny that it's written by David Whittaker, isn't it?
Yes.
And he effectively did like the script editing of the Daleks, and you had that same scene where they're both on a cliff face looking down at everything below.
Sort of same beats running through it.
Yeah. Kukulian's quite well done.
He is, really well done, yeah.
What, is it Sandy, the beast?
Sandy,
yeah. Sandy.
Murdered.
Yeah. Murdered by barbarous.
Yeah, cold-blooded murder.
Yes.
Yeah, with a flare gun.
This is the second story that we've just talked about, the first Doctor, where Barbara murders people.
Yes.
Apparently that mask that Kukulian was wearing,
yeah,
and that was based on a close-up of a fly's face.
Oh, was it? Well,
yeah, yes. Makes sense. Yes. It was very convincing, wasn't it? I love the fact
so
that...
Good, yeah.
I hope I'm not spoiling this 60s story, but it turns out...
Spoiling music, sha-la-la-la-la.
This monster really is just a man in a rubber costume.
Yeah. Yeah. Although it's one of the more convincing rubber costumes.
Yeah, yeah. Really went to town on it. Yeah. I also liked the Sandy costume. I thought that was quite good.
I thought it was pretty good.
Quite an ingenious way. Clearly it was somebody just lying
on their belly. It's a bit like
in a porn suit. But
do the similar thing in the Rebos operation, don't they?
Yeah.
Also, I don't know if you noticed, the lighting was turned down a lot for this one. So you had the caves, didn't you?
The caves looked like caves. Yeah. You've only got one light source.
Yeah,
over far away.
It's a nice split screen, or I don't know how they did the
Where Sandy's laying underneath. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was all very good.
Yeah, some good stuff there. And another shot where you had the miniature on half the screen. You had Barbara and Ian
on the
looking around.
Yeah, looking around.
Christopher Barry directed it.
That explains it.
A lot of good direction. Nice close-ups.
Some thought has gone into it. It's not just gone through the paces.
Yeah.
He clearly didn't
have a massive budget there. The small cast, a small number of sets. But
it's nicely choreographed.
Really good. The only problem is it does highlight some of the problems with modern technology. The ship, the Astra 7 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
All the walls are silvery, futuristic. But on my Blu-ray, you could see graduations in the colour, posterization of the colour. Because this is black and white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've only got 256 colours
on
an 8-bit Blu-ray for different shades of grey, and you can see it. If this had been Ultra HD with HDR, it would have been fine.
Well, we watched the iPlayer, and so I didn't notice that. So
interesting.
Not on the iPlayer, anyway, but there we go.
I can't imagine their HDR on the iPlayer. But
I didn't notice it on the iPlayer, but I wasn't looking.
Yeah.
You know.
Because originally it wouldn't have looked like that.
No.
Analog.
Yeah.
They don't have those graduations in colours. They weren't limited to 256 colours of grey.
Yeah, it would just have been uniform grey.
Yeah, but anyway. Yeah, an interesting idea as well to have this two-parter just set up new companion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it slotted in. They thought, oh dear, we're losing Caroline Ford. Yeah. You've got the Romans coming. Can we slot in a little two-parter just to introduce a new character?
But it's still second season, is it?
Yeah, this was third.
Third.
No, it's the second season.
Second season.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking we had a two-parter in the first season.
Edge of Destruction.
Yes. But that's because they didn't have the episodes ready. I'm just wondering.
Yeah, because similarly with this one, it's usually boxed up with the Romans, isn't it? It's like they continue into each other. You have the cliffhanger at the end of Rescue. And the comedy in this one sort of is a precursor to really a lot of more comedy coming in the next one.
The major comedy.
But it does a lot and it does it quite well. And it looks brilliant, really, except for... obviously the Blu-ray with your grey scales.
It wasn't that bad, but it was noticeable that you wouldn't get that on analog.
I couldn't see any reuse of sets in it control panels.
All built exclusively. And again, what struck me about the Romans, maybe because it's black and white, and so the quality of the picture is lower.
There are some bits in the Romans,
The outside locations, although it's filmed in the studio, look relatively convincing that they're outside, with all the undergrowth, the rocks, the sand.
Yeah.
It doesn't jar with the rest of
it. Because
sometimes when they do location or outside, you can definitely say, oh, well, that's obviously backdrop. I'm remembering some of the Star Trek planet yes. hells.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, but it...
Backdrops yeah. and... Yeah.
But because... Maybe because it's black and white. And
it
the,
does hide if quality. Also, yeah, yeah lower it, line count. Was yeah, it 400 yeah, it, something odd lines? Yeah.
It covers over a lot of sins.
You've got to have a good director to pull it off, though, because Dougie Canfield can do it, but there's some, like, in The Chase,
yeah,
where... I forget what the director, he did Daleks and Dalek Invasion of Earth, but he doesn't really pull it off, so it still looks like a fake backdrop.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Christopher Barry and Dougie Campbell, they know how to do it quite well.
Richard Martin.
Richard Martin, yes.
No, I think that for a two-parter, it didn't seem to drag at all. It seemed to...
Went on a cracking pace.
Yeah, it seemed quite pacey, particularly in the episode one. There was quite a lot going on, yeah. but I don't feel it dragged at all. I kind of like the conclusion, although...
Very quickly concluded.
I think the two beings, shall we call them, yeah. I think...
The Didonians or whatever,
yeah. The Didoi, as Ian Martin likes to call them in the audio. But see, there was precursors to it, because he knew that had happened with the TV version. So occasionally, Vicky would see them glinting on... a cliff face, that sort of thing, and it would be explained. I think that was the weakest part, was that they just suddenly felt like they turned up.
That wasn't entirely clear at first. Are they the crew from the ship? Or because they look just human.
They remind me a bit like the antibodies from the City of the Exelon. Yes. So just suddenly they're destroying stuff stuff like that. But yeah, other than that, maybe that was because they didn't have enough time to expand.
Yeah, if it had been a 3 or 4-parter, you could see how they would get involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Might have got their revenge on Gordon for killing off their people. Yeah, Gordon Bennett. Yeah.
Yes.
I couldn't help but laugh at Vicky's outfit, though.
Yeah, it was a bit short.
Well, I was thinking that the collar made it look like Kermit.
It did, yes. Well, Kermit with his legs out.
Yeah.
I'm just she bent over to get to one of the... she did. And almost flashed us.
She did, yes.
Something for the dads.
Yeah. She was meant to be very young. But
exactly.
She was actually in her early to mid-20s.
I am not Trump, so I don't find that particularly...
At this point, I think she was actually older than Gillan was.
I understand. I understand.
She doesn't look it.
Yeah, I understand the actress was a lot older, but I got the impression she was playing a lot younger.
I think she's meant to be about 16 or something like that. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, not sure. But yes, they were clearly going for that Susan look, weren't they?
Because she had a couple of kids by the time she played Susan, didn't she?
But I can't help thinking, put some strides on, please.
The swinging 60s. Talking about 69.
I know. Yeah, that, now I know where Ian Martin got it, because in the he does like an intro and an outro for the crew on the rescue ship. And the first thing you hear is them laughing about the number 69. I was like, why has he shoved that in? But then obviously at the beginning of this one, they managed to get a 69 in there as well. Yeah. So it makes sense.
Nice.
Indeed.
Comes full circle.
So if you have watched, listened to, or even read The Rescuers, why don't you tell us what you think?
Rescuers?
The Rescue, sorry. The Rescue, sorry, I'm thinking the Disney film.
Yeah.
Why not tell us what you think at show?
At Staggering
Stories.
Dot.
Net.
Woohoo.
Did we lose somebody?
Shh. Trap door.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Oh, well.
There's something down there.
Don't open that trap door. Yes.
But please, they...
What else have we been doing over this busy weekend?
We've done a lot this couple of weeks.
We've been loitering at a local hotel, eating lots of Mackie D's.
Oh, dear. Making a sign towards sailors?
And rubbing shoulders with some famous people.
We were at the Capitol.
Dwyer's Convention.
The 50th.
50 years of Dwyer's.
50 years of Dwyer's Convention, yes. What happened? Who was there? Tell us about it.
I did not steal the Sixth Doctor's coat. The only reason I went, But that was it. I didn't get to steal that or ride in an Imperial Dalek. So I behaved because my back was out, wasn't it?
You did stare and drawl at it for quite some time.
I got quite close, but then I was chickened out. It looks too big for me. They're never going to believe it belonged to me.
Well, let's see. Doctor-wise, we had Paul McGann.
Paul McGann.
Colin Baker.
Yep. Yes.
Companion-wise, we had Janet Fielding, Katie Manning.
Nicola Bryant.
Yep. And then we had other people like Marquez.
Paul McGann just getting everywhere.
Let's see, Rob Shearman, Jane Goddard, some of the creature performers from old and new Who, like Christopher Ryan, Dan Starkey, and other people.
You had some writers, didn't you?
We had the guy who played Tide in
War Between the Land and the Sea,
who also played Tim Shaw.
Yes.
Yes.
It took me a while to remember who that was. I thought, that's a joke, isn't it? Oh, no. Mm. Now I remember.
And I have to say, it's a shame that the ladies aren't with us.
Oh, well, just think of the mess.
Well, the guy who played Tide is a very broad EastEnder. Yeah. Watch your mate, Cockney, how's it going? Yeah. Apples and better. Very broad that.
See, I was enjoying that version of him.
But then he produced his Tide voice, which is much more lower, much more deeper, and the two ladies had a crisis.
Yeah, instant hot flushes.
Yeah.
But he was lovely. And he was sitting behind us at one point during the big finish presentation they were doing, weren't they?
Oh, really?
And they were joking. I think it was Jason Hay Gallery was joking that it's easier to name someone that hasn't been on Big Finish.
Yeah, and he joked about it.
And he went, I haven't been on Big Finish!
Yeah.
But you can change that! But no, he was very funny. And yes, he even I had a hot flush at one point.
Did you have a crisis?
I had a bit of a crisis. Gene kicked it off, though. It's her fault.
So we had Christopher Ryan and Dan Starkey.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Sontarans.
Double act.
Yeah. And, of course, Kiv, after the passing of Nabil Shaban recently.
Yes. Marquez was there with Dominic Glynn.
Yep.
The two musicians.
Yes, Dominic Glynn was there, wasn't he? Yeah. I didn't get to speak to him, unfortunately, but he did do the best version of the theme tune, no matter what anyone else says.
Oh, Jeff Love.
It also was quite an emotional
certainly
one
at the end there, because yes,
well, it popped up a couple of times. You had I'm trying to remember the name. It was a background performer. I'm trying to remember the name of him, but he went to Ukraine with Sylvester.
Oh yes.
And talking of his experiences there and his dealing with the fan community and the general community, he got quite emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even know there was a Doctor Who fan community in Ukraine.
Oh,
yeah,
no, I know. I knew Sylvester was in Ukraine last year or maybe the year before?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
At a con. And it's
Kiev as well, which is obviously quite the target.
Wow, that's brave.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite interesting. Or disturbing, should I say. The conventions that we go to, the money goes to charity and the money goes to, that convention, the money went to the war effort.
Yes.
You know, that sort of brings it home to you.
Yeah.
And apparently, according to him, Sylvester slept through all the air raid alarms.
Yeah, they had to go down to the basement. It sounds very World War II, doesn't it?
Yeah, quite scary.
Wow.
Then we had the life presentation of the award to the artist...
Colin Howard.
Colin Howard, thank you. Who's suffering from, is it multiple sclerosis?
That
got a little bit emotional.
He was very emotional, he got
very teary.
He also looked in good spirits about it.
Oh, God, yeah.
He was really chuffed for it.
I mean, there's a little bit on YouTube afterwards with him in the hotel thanking everyone
for his... I didn't know that.
Yeah. If you look out for it. Mm. And then finally we had the ending with Tony.
Tony Jordan, the coordinator, organiser.
Yeah.
He's been part of DWAS for 40 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
is now stepping down
as coordinator. I mean, the capital conventions are entirely his he was the driving motivational force behind it.
Because there was another couple who were doing some of the early ones, the ones at the Aurora there, was that other couple who loved, what's his name, that comedian.
Yeah, but Tony was still in there and was still part of that main committee.
Yes.
Because he was Karen's contact.
Yes.
He's always been Karen's contact.
He was a bit further back in the background for those.
But he's always been Karen's contact in the capital. So, but
yeah, everyone got emotional then, didn't they?
Yes.
I mean, his kids were up there.
Got a little speech from Colin.
Yeah, that's Colin had written a special thing just for, because obviously they'd known each other for 40-odd years.
Yeah.
In fact, there were some videos of the 10th anniversary Dwyer's event.
Yeah, I think that was one of the Panopticon 3,
And it had a young Colin and Nicola Bryant
there. Yeah.
Oh, was that the thing that got shown on Saturday evening?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Were any of you there for that the Panopticons? I never got to
go. No, I never went to the...
Don't think I ever did a Panopticon.
No, I know I've never done a Panopticon. The capitals have been my first ever Dwas.
I did the boat, the Harry Stuck of Holland convention on a ferry.
Yeah,
nice. Talking of presentations, there was the Sons of Dick.
Yes, yes.
They were presenting, is it Pete McTighe?
McTighe.
A couple of dicks gave him an award.
Yeah, worthy of their father.
Oh, yes, that's... one of the writers,
I don't think I'd realise till they actually listed Pete's sort of achievements and his contributions how much of an impact he's actually had.
Yeah, he's been instrumental in all those trailers, really, for the
Blu-ray
box sets. Yeah. And more besides.
So, on the whole, a good day was had by all.
Good weekend.
Good weekend,
And was this the first time you'd changed venue?
No. Been here. It was there for a couple of years. Yeah. Did a one-day event last year in London.
Yeah.
POSC. Then came back to Crawley. Okay. There's no talk yet of the next one.
Not because I think Tony's leaving. It's all change at the top, so they've got to sort out whether they're going to continue doing capitals.
Yeah. It's sold out, I think.
Yeah.
It's very packed.
Well, I think this is the first time they've had to extend it out to other hotels for rooms.
So. Yeah, it'll be interesting because with events like these, you often need to book the hotel and get contracts in place over a year out.
In the past, we've... By the end of the con, we've known there's going to be another con because they opened the bookings.
Yes, last time at the POSC in London, we knew about this one, and I booked up at the previous convention. Yeah. And likewise for previous years at the Aurora and then at this Crown Plaza, I'd booked up for the next year.
Yeah, and we also knew about the one in Birmingham.
Yes, did not book up.
We didn't book that one, but I'm saying we knew it was there. Yes.
It's very rare that you have a convention within walking distance to your house.
As I said, no disrespect, the Capitol and the Dwas are expensive conventions to book for.
Good 115 pounds, I think, for 2 days.
It's some of the more expensive ones for us. It's the fact that it's within walking distance. For us, it makes it so much cheaper. Yeah.
Good event, and hopefully they will do more. I'm sure they will.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I doubt it would be the same time next year. It will probably be at best autumn next year, I'd imagine. Yeah.
That's if it is next year. I mean, I can see it dropping a year just to sort out paperwork.
Or maybe they go back to a one-day event. It's easier to find a one-day venue, probably.
Yeah. Watch this space.
Indeed. Soon as we know, you'll know.
I'm at the stage where I'm coughing now.
It's okay.
Well, I have to take my leave of you, everyone.
In that case, lead us out, Crumb.
Oh. Yeah, it's because we have no feedback.
Yeah.
No feedback, no. We said hello to Ted of Pertwee.
We've done that. So guess that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Leave us out, Jay!
But never fear. Next time there'll be more of the same. More fun, frivolity, and jollity. More news and reviews. More who, old and new. So until that...
See
for capital. Yes. Crammatus.
Crumbulent.
Corpulent.
Canopa. It's a word I've just made up. Shh, don't tell Karen.
Comes collapsing.
Crashing down towards us.
This is me, Jay, saying cheerio.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Farewell.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, number 498, featuring Adam J. Purcell, some of Andy Simpkins, Jay Doran, Keith Dunn, and Scott Fuller. The views expressed here are those of the speaker and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers on the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this has been an El Presidente production for www.staggeringstories.net. Oh, Keith, on YouTube,
yes.
Because he was recycling bottom quotes the other day, as in the TV programme. And I think on YouTube it is, they've done the bottom title sequence as the Friends title sequence.
Oh, dear.
But it's called Twats. So so if you want to look it up, you have to type in bottom Twats.
That's a state flag of Colorado, that is. Okay. As a balloon.
Oh, I thought it's a Nurofen sign.
No.
isn't. Have you got a headache stuck up in the air in a hot air balloon? Should have bought your Nurofen. Have you switched off your vibrator? What? Your reacting vibrator.
You mentioning June, I always remember when Jane and myself went to see June 2. Mm-hmm. The air conditioning in the cinema broke down, sir.
So carbon dioxide.
Immersive, yes. Mm.
Terry and June 2. Did I watch Men in Black 1 or 2 on Netflix? And then I looked for them yesterday and they were gone.
Yes, yeah. It was... They were literally just about to remove it just a few days after we did the recording last
time.
They,
they were on last chance to watch when we saw number two.
Yeah. You had to get your number two in quick.
Right.
Right, so no whistling noses.
1 minute silence. Get your noises out.
Are we doing a testing first?
Yeah, we need to do a quick...
Get your noises out now. Tappity, tappity, tappity.
Yep.
Squeaky, squeaky, squeaky.
Yep, yep.
So it just sounded like a conventional heavy breathing.
Okay, ready? Let's just go. One, two, three.
We're not allowed to stop till we get that redness like Clara did in Deep Breath.
Well, it's a thing that I've just noticed is, got to be silent, take a deep breath. God, I want to yawn.
Yeah, yeah. Could you hear the plane going past? Just as we started.
That's better. Oh, okay. Right.
It was a lot easier to do with the silence without the women here.
Ooh. I know.
Must remember to work that into the conversation when I get home to camp.
I think you said the Tom Cruise wars, and then Wars of the World.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's Tom Cruise versus Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Not the greatest adaptation.
Oh, Scientology.
He was already welcome aliens, wasn't he, really?
He did it ironically.
Okay. Oh, dear.
All right, see you all soon.
Take care.
And then there were four.
So when you're editing it, he's going to randomly disappear and not be there for the outro.
Won't be the first time.
Yeah. You have to say something about that.
So it's just like there's just four goodbyes. But there was five of us. You look up bottom twats on YouTube.
I'm looking up bottom twats.
It just sounds
hopefully horrible. That's not going to go on the outtakes.
Oh, you know it will.
I know it is.